This podcast is supported by Americans for Medical Progress and was founded and created through the Michael D. Hare Fellowship, awarded annually to support projects that inform and educate the public about the critical role of animal research in furthering medical progress. The fellowship honors the late Dr. Michael Hare, a renowned board-certified laboratory animal veterinarian who dedicated his career to scientific and medical advancements and who was deeply committed to animal welfare and advocacy. Hey, everyone, and welcome into the March edition of Lab Rat Chat News Bites segments that we do, or try to do, every month. And I'm pretty sure this is the March edition. It's March 30th, for the record. This probably won't come out until April 1st.
I don't think there's any way around that, but we'll see.
And I'm pretty sure this happened last year. So it's like our April Fool's Day tradition to release our March News Bite on April 1st.
I like it.
So we'll say we planned it.
And apparently we're very busy every March, I guess, is what that means.
Yeah. We just keep getting busier and busier.
Yeah, you know.
Like school ended and I was like, oh, I'll have more time. But that was a joke.
I knew you wouldn't have more time. I remember having a conversation with you and I said, are you crazy? You're going to be actually going to work and like having a set schedule. And you're like, no, it's going to be easier.
But I mean, it's nice that we get our schedule for the month. So I know like
where I
have days off.
Yeah.
And then when I'm not at work, I don't have to spend my time studying. So in a way, I feel like I do have more time.
I'll give you that.
But now there's just other projects to be done. You know, building pig pens, catching pigs that get loose.
Are they still getting loose?
Well, it would be hard for them to get loose at this point.
Good. Okay.
They're now...
We've secured the perimeter.
I'm in the sense that they are now in a freezer.
Oh, the meat pigs have become meat.
Meat pigs have become meat, yes.
Understood.
They went to the slaughterhouse a few weeks ago. We got 300...
You didn't process them yourself?
No.
Oh, okay.
Thought about it.
Yeah.
Weighed the options. Figured I needed some tools that I don't currently have.
Well, you have this tradition of just like starting things without... You know, thinking it through. So I'm actually fairly happy that you thought that one through. Well,
I mean, Claire nixed that idea early on. It was my intention to just do it in the backyard. We got a big tree. But I figured cost-wise, like I'm not going to get as much meat off of these pigs to be able to do it myself. Right.
Yeah. Okay.
Not a professional. Become a professional.
Okay.
I feel like I could do a fairly good job, but I'm not, like I don't have, you know, I just don't have, you know, they have those bandsaws, bone saws. They have everything to cut through it. So I don't have all that. So I figured we'll let the professionals handle it, get more meat, more cost efficient. We got 342 pounds of pork.
You are going to be so sick of pork.
So we can supply pork. I mean, we could basically become a mini pork supplier in the area. We've already eaten lots of pork chops.
Have a farm stand.
Lots of ground pork.
Yeah.
Everyone always asks, like, what do you do with ground pork? And I don't know if you...
Somebody
told me about pork burgers. I think
we
maybe.
Do everything with it that we do beef with. Like meatloaf, burgers.
Pork,
it makes no
I've never
difference.
Tried meat. We should do a pork loaf. That would be good.
Yeah, it's delicious.
We pork
it's
burgers,
really good
I think,
like
are
a,
my favorite, though.
No, do you like a meatloaf favorite. With like a like an Asian, like an orange duck sauce on top of it? Delicious.
Okay. I mean, that sounds a little fancy.
No, like
I'm gonna
literally
have to order
save
some
your
orange
no,
duck sauce. I don't know how to
make
that.
Save your duck sauce from a takeout thing and like squeeze the packets on the pork meatloaf before you put it in the oven. Delish.
Okay. I mean, the last time we made a meatloaf was a long time, so.
Yeah.
But we'll have to, I mean, we have so much ground pork.
Pork meatloaf.
So many ribs, bacon. We got fresh ham. I've never had a fresh ham in my entire life because all the hams you get from stores are
salt.
All cured.
Yeah.
And so that'll be fun. To cook up.
Cool.
So we have a freezer full of that. And then our steer went to the slaughterhouse also last week.
And what do you mean steer?
The cow?
You have not filled me in on this one.
Castrated bull?
I should have clarified. I know what a steer is.
Okay.
What do you mean your steer?
with a friend of ours.
Okay.
He has land and he was getting a few steers. To raise up and then
bring. In an extra one?
So, yeah. So, he asked if I wanted to get in on it. And I said,
oh
yes.
Oh, my goodness.
Absolutely. Just because, I mean, there's nothing worse. Like, go back to when COVID first happened and they were limiting how much meat you bought. You'd go to the store. You couldn't find any meat. Like, there's nothing worse.
I feel like I should welcome you to the dark side of, like, paranoid homesteading.
Yeah. So, like, now we're going
to welcome to the dark side.
So much pork, so much beef, because we didn't split it with anybody. So we're going to get whole cow.
Do you have a generator if your power goes out?
We don't. I need to get a standalone. We have a whole house generator.
Okay.
That is broken. Trying to get fixed.
You need to take action on that.
But yeah, June 1st, hurricane season's coming quickly.
Yeah, because if you lose power and you lose all that meat, it was for nothing.
I will cry.
So my suggestion to you.
It'll be the first time I'll cry in a long time. But I would cry over meat. So we're going to go get a little standalone generator. Just
get a little cheap one for your freezer and your fridge, and then you won't.
I don't even care if I lose what's in the fridge. If the freezer went out, that would be devastating.
That's how, I mean, because we feed our dogs a raw diet. So, like, we buy cases of pre-made, like, we don't grind it up ourselves. It's like a dog food company that supplies it. But, like, we buy cases at a time, and it's not cheap. And so it was like, okay, if we're going to have, we probably have an equal amount of meat in our freezer, but it's not for human consumption. But
I mean,
yeah.
If push comes to shove, you can eat some. You can eat it.
There's like ground bone and ground organ in it.
Organ in it is good. Like, we got the heart ground into our ground.
There's not
beef.
Enough. And there's not enough duck sauce in the world to cover up that flavor.
All of the ground meat out there is not just like, there's usually heart and or tongue.
More okay with and the more
or liver
organ.
Ground into that, and you don't know it.
It's
all ground in there.
That's why we have chickens. The chickens are for the humans, and the dogs get to have their dog meat. I'm not like a big meat eater though.
Organ
like,
meat's
I know, like,
really good for you though.
Yes, so, I'm aware it's good for you. That doesn't mean I want to eat it though.
But it's like, you wouldn't even know. You wouldn't taste it. And you're like, oh God, the liver.
Did I tell you? Wait, so, but we're supposed to be focusing on the podcast here, but did I ever tell you the story of my husband at the grocery store when we bought, gizzards and hearts for our dogs? And it was like late night and he may have been tipsy. This was long before we had kids when we could like be slightly irresponsible in our lives.
No, I never heard the story.
We were at Food Lion at like, I don't know, 9 p.m. And we were like, oh, we're out of dog food. Like, go to the meat case and like grab some organ meat and whatever. And we got some like regular chicken and the like packs of hearts and gizzards from chickens, 99 cents a pound. And we're up at checkout. There's this older woman in front of us who was kind of like doing regular grocery shopping. She was kind of like humming to herself. And Greg kind of like went along with the beat and starts singing. He's like, gizzards and gravy. And he starts making up this song. And she looks over and she's like, that's right, gizzards and gravy. And she got all excited. And I'm like, is gizzards and gravy like a human food? And Greg was like, I don't know why I said that. It just came to me. And this woman was so into this song. And the cashier was like, you're eating these? And I was like, I just want to get out of this store right now.
Yeah, I mean, gizzards are good. I've never had gizzards and gravy.
But I don't know why gravy got thrown into it. He just said it came to him and that's what he started saying. Gizzards
like,
and gravy.
Sounds like him.
Yeah.
There's so many weird pork products, really. Like when I went to the store in Virginia and they had
snouts.
They had like pig necks.
Mm-hmm.
Which I know, like
pig
turkey
tails,
necks and chicken necks,
chitlins
are real common. Yeah, cracklins.
Did you get the chitlins?
No,
you opted out of that.
Yep.
Okay.
Not even sure they offered it.
Oh,
they
okay.
Probably could have, but I don't know. But we got some pork butts.
Yep.
We got the hams. We got the ribs.
Shoulders.
I had no idea how much bacon you would get off a pig.
Oh yeah.
I've got plenty of bacon. Oh, and let me just also offer a disclaimer. If there's children in the background.
I hear your children, yes.
Yeah. I'm just solo parenting today. Two kids are home.
So I was like, can you guys,
right. I put the 5-year-old in charge of the 2-year-old. And so God only knows what's happening out there.
Well, that's our cue. That's our cue to get into the science.
Yeah. I also have a dog. Sandy is in heat. So this is awesome. to try to keep Gumbo away from her. It's quite the nightmare.
Oh, man.
So, because, I mean, we are going to breed her at least once, maybe twice.
Yeah.
But I don't want to breed her the first time. And so we're trying to keep Gumbo apart. And it's just, like, he will break through a wall to try to get to her.
Oh, dear.
And she is terrified of him.
Oh, no. Poor girl.
So, because now she's at the point where she's kind of receptive to it, too. So now we, like, really have to keep him away.
Mm.
And we have a couple days of this left. I think then we'll be in the clear. So
for another 6 months.
So yes, they are separated. If you hear dogs start barking,
you gotta
probably
run.
Because they're trying to get to each other. Or I really hope the kids don't let the other dog in while during this recording.
Well, so, it could this be could fun. Be, yeah,
that's right. This could be the time of puppy conception. So hopefully not. But like you said, we should probably get started.
Yep.
Just so kids don't draw on the walls and or I get puppies.
Yep. All right. So.
I have my two articles. I can sum up real quick. I'm doing beetle butts and kidney stuff.
Okay.
Yeah.
I am going to be talking about a very bizarre mouse story that is like, has pros and cons like crazy, deep discussion. And I'm also going to talk about superb fairy wrens.
Did you add the word superb or does the article say superb?
No, it's part of it. I thought it was made up at like the beginning of the article, but then it kept saying like superb fairy wrens. And then I Googled it and I'm like, oh my goodness, they're really superb fairy wrens. So that's what I've got.
I mean, I can't wait to hear it because I don't even know what to think about that article.
Yeah.
I don't even know where it's going to go.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, March is apparently amongst many other disease awareness months. National Kidney Month. And so I figured I'd do something about kidneys. And what I found was an article about NAD. So I don't know if you've heard about NAD. There's been lots of talk about it recently, especially during like COVID. People were getting NAD drips and all this stuff and just supposed to help biological functions.
What's NAD?
NAD is nicotinamide adenine dinucleotide.
We'll call it NAD. All right.
NAD. It's in all of our cells. And it's kind of essential. It's almost works. I don't know if you can say it kind of works as a hormone, but it kind of activates and regulates lots of different bodily functions. As we get older, NAD just naturally declines in our cells. The levels of it naturally get lower and lower. And eventually, as it gets too low, we start to get different organs will become diseased, particularly the kidney will start to become diseased when our NAD levels start to decline as we get older. And so there's lots of substances out there that we know of that can raise NAD levels, including just getting NAD like straight IV drips. And then there's precursors such as nicotinamide mononucleotide, NMN is also one of those supplements, which like what works in the pathway, it's like kind of like a vitamin B pathway. It gets converted to a different nicotinamide and then a different than that NMN I mentioned and then NAD. Still following me?
Sure.
So it's just a
lot of
alphabet pathway.
Soup going on. Yep.
Yeah. And so they've just found they did small animal studies, mice in particular, that show an abundance of NAD. So if we are able to supplement our bodies with NAD, it can not only prevent organ dysfunction or kidney dysfunction, it can actually like stop it and then also start reversing the different types of acute and chronic kidney disease that are from aging. You know, if there's another type of kidney disease from something else, then that obviously it's not necessarily going to help. Maybe it could help. But this study particularly just wanted us to see the effects of aging on chronic kidney disease or acute kidney disease with the NAD. So they found that when they gave the animals the NAD supplements,
what kind of animal?
The precursors, it was mice.
Mice, okay.
They found that it did slow stop and then even sometimes even reverse the different types of kidney disease. So just kind of like an easy, I don't know. So I don't know about toxicity of NAD. If you could have too much, if it could be harmful. But I think it's just another good article that shows us supplementation with vitamins, things like that can be beneficial. You know, I feel like so many physicians and doctors, nutritionists out there, a lot of them still say vitamins aren't really necessary, which I feel like because we can get it all in our diet, but nobody's getting the proper amount in a diet. So that's where I think, you know, proper supplements done right can really have beneficial effects. And this NAD supplement clearly shows that, especially those prone to kidney disease later in life, whether it's through genetic testing or whatnot, can definitely help prevent, you know, that from developing. So I thought it was a cool study, something that they're going to continue to look into more. And then hopefully we'll have some more treatments and make it more available for people to get this type. And I don't know if taking vitamin B would help NAD levels or if you need straight NAD. I don't know. I'm not the scientist that did the study or a physician, but I don't know. Cool stuff. All right. Especially I have some kidney disease related things in my family. So it's cool to read about things that kind of impact, you know, people that you know directly.
Yeah. Well, my question for you is, do you want to have a deep philosophical conversation or do you want some lighthearted cute bird story first?
Let's do deep philosophical first.
All right. So I'm going to read the title of this article. Scientists create mice from two dads after making eggs from skin cells.
What?
It's really cool.
How do you make eggs? Mice from eggs?
Well, okay. You know, like they had to implant them in a female to like, they made
not
fertilized.
Like, okay, they didn't hatch them from an egg. I was thinking, when you said eggs, I immediately went making, like they were creating
like
some
eggs?
Sort of. Yeah, I thought like they created some sort of.
All right, come back from farming to the science world. The title says eggs. I guess the title's there to grab your attention. But scientists actually created mice with two biologically male parents. It's a whole process with lots of sciencey words here. They took skin cells from fully grown male lab mice, which, the same as male humans, contain one X and one Y chromosome. They turned it into induced pluripotent stem cells,
okay,
which is what you need, which is the type of stem cell you would need to then program into an embryonic state.
Yeah, that was a huge study back in like, I don't know, 2008 or something, when they first realized that they could take some normal cells that
and
have already
change
been,
them into something.
Already been designated as a certain type and put them back into that.
Reprogram them to another thing.
Pluripotent state. Yeah.
So they did a bunch of stuff to these cells. Some of them turned into XO cells, like the Y was dropped. So then they treated them with a compound called reversine to increase the number of XX cells. So now they have female and male cells. They converted them into primordial germ cells and then did a whole bunch of other stuff. And then they implanted the fertilized, healthy-looking eggs into a mouse uterus, and 7 of the 630 implanted mouse embryos gave rise to mouse pups, which, like, that's like 1%, so you're like, oh, big deal.
Yeah.
But then you have the side of it of, like, the human ethics, like, because certainly this would really be a huge relief and help to same-sex couples who want to have kids of their own genetics, which really cool.
Were the mouse pups normal?
The 7 that were born were mice. Like, they just...
Like, did they live a normal mouse life?
I don't think it...
Yeah, I mean, like, I feel like so many of these, like, I'm not saying that we're...
This article, I mean, this isn't the publication. This is just a news article. I mean, it links to the... I didn't read the full publication because that's way too long. But right. I mean, that is something to think about because this article doesn't specify. But there's two sides of this because certainly, like I said, same-sex couples could benefit from this in the future if you can get it right. But there's a lot of things that like these cells that are well-known in mice, we have no clue how to do it in human cells because you don't have enough human cells to practice with. And also the ethics of is it morally okay to create 630 embryos and just store them or like they, you know, aren't deemed like viable or whatever. Like there's so many like moral questions for human implications, but like this could be cool if they can fine tune it. And the article says, you know, we're probably at least 10 years away from even trying this, thinking about trying it with humans. But this is the first step.
Like, no matter what the discovery is, it's always we're 10 years away.
But the flip side to this is helping endangered species, because like one thing that this article talks about is the white rhinos. I guess there's only 2 northern white rhinos in existence.
Are there 2? I thought one died.
Well, this says there's a 30-year-old and his daughter, who's 19, are the last 2 of their kind on the planet. So if you could, I mean, obviously breeding a dad with his daughter is not ideal, but if they're the last 2, but if you could implant embryos in other rhinos that could carry them to term, maybe there's a chance. So like I feel like this is the deep philosophical side of it, because it's like, you know, you translate that to human medicine and you get into a dicey territory, but then you think about saving northern white rhinos and you're like, oh my God, that's amazing. So, I mean, it kind of has...
I don't know what to think of it.
That's why I said it. It's a deep philosophical.
I just feel like it's...
it is science that is happening, and it is for people to interpret however they want to interpret. I think,
I just feel like they're going to have problems.
Right. And I think this article kind of acknowledges that. Again, this is like the first time it's ever been done in mice. And again, it was 7 out of 630 implanted mouse embryos turned into mouse pups. But like the fact that it happened
is so crazy. And that's just starting out. So they will get more efficient at it. And that number will continue to rise.
Yeah. Isn't it? It's
just as long
crazy.
As they're healthy. Like if these mice are being born with like genetic mutations or issues.
But there should be no reason for that, because they turned the cells into embryonic egg cells.
But does it completely translate? Like, is everything that normally goes on in that process being carried over?
Yeah.
Because I mean,
thing. It's like, is that humane? If you can figure out how to help, you know, fertility issues or same-sex couples, but like, are you doing something that will cause that kid to have some glitch? I don't know what the proper term, like,
yeah, some sort of like mutation. Or I make, what if,
right,
like, what if they have a third arm
because,
or something?
Well,
but that's what you went through. That's,
right. But like, is it, what's the pros and cons of like giving that family a child that they will love, knowing that child will have some disadvantage? Again, we are like speculating, because who knows where this science is going to go. But it's like I said, it's a deep philosophical conversation to have with yourself and your colleagues about like, wow, first off, this is super cool. But second of all, like, what could this mean? You know?
Yeah. Yeah. It could mean a lot. I mean, it is cool that they can do it. I think we can do lots of stuff that's cool theoretically that I'm not sure we ever need to be doing. Especially like, so many people are concerned about population control and that people are having too many kids. And then if we just start going like, oh, let's just start making kids ourselves.
Well, I wasn't going down that rabbit hole. I was just going with the like morality of, you know, fully lab created.
Yeah,
well, humans,
I know we can avoid it. Yeah, but I'm not in that people are having too many kids camp. Obviously, I have 4.
I was gonna say, yeah. I was like, wait, how many you got over there, Jeff?
Yeah, we're mean. We've got a basketball team. So,
that's
but
awesome.
That being said, I don't know. It's like you said, I think this would be a great conversation at a bar.
Uh-huh.
To sit down and just kind of ponder about. So, like, I don't know. We've cloned animals before. What's the sheep? Dolly is its name, right?
Yep.
And I think Dolly lived a normal life.
That
was a long time ago, too.
That was a long time ago.
And so advances have clearly come a long ways now that we can take cells and put them back to stem cells. Just the embryology in general is so complicated. Like, there's so many steps. It's really like a miracle that babies are born healthy, knowing all the things that have to happen.
Yeah.
At certain times in development.
Yeah.
For them to be born. So, I have an intruder
thing
in the room.
Oh, okay.
So, she went back out. Yeah, it is pretty incredible. I think it's crazy that animals, you know, human babies, anything's born normal, really, when you break it down of all the stuff that has
to
be done.
But also, I'm going to poke a hole in that and say, what is normal?
I guess just the fact that if you're born with all of your organs inside your body, you're functioning, everything's functioning properly, walking, talking, breathing, thinking, But yeah, I mean, so I don't know. It's a lot to think about.
Oof. Yep. So that's my philosophical article, but my next one is much more lighthearted and cutesy.
Yeah, we'll have Lab Rat Chat at the bar episode.
Nice.
And we'll just break it down.
Cool.
That's what we should do. Just travel around to bars.
Separate bars and set up our podcasting station since we're not together.
Right. People would look at us strange. Okay. My other article is about beetle butts. So
excellent.
It's never is something that I've ever thought about. But have you ever thought about how beetles stay hydrated? Have you?
I thought you were going to go with like the cool iridescent colors on their shells or something. And I was going to be like, I think about beetle colors all the time. But no, I don't think about their hydration because I think about trying to get them off my plants that they're killing.
Yeah. So that's kind of where this application goes. So they have.
Okay.
Beetles are great at surviving in extremely dry environments. And you think like they're little crusty beetles. Like, of course they don't need water. But they do, just like us. They just need smaller amounts. They still have cells that need to function, that need water. They have organs that are in there that need to function properly. So they still need water, but they've always kind of wondered how they get the water that they need. And the way that they do it, they found, is they open up their rectum and they take in the water from the moist environment. So even though they're in a dry, like arid environment, they can still get some of that fluid that's in the air, some of those moisture droplets. They can pull them in through their rectum, and they have these special cells in there that are able, they're called leptophragmata cells, that are then able to, I guess, help with water extraction and then diffuse that water or absorb that water into their little bodies.
Okay.
Yeah. So they can even, and they can get some water like out of the air and some water through the food, even through like the grains that they eat, which are only like 1-2% water. So but primarily they get their water through their butts. And so over the last 500 million years,
evolution not have them drink water through their mouth?
I don't know. I don't have the answer.
Okay.
Yeah. They specifically looked at like
answers.
I don't know all the types of beetles, but there's one called the confused flower beetle, which I just thought was funny. Like, what's it confused about? Did it not want to eat flour?
It's confused how to get its water.
It's not. It's because it's one that they study that knows how to get it perfectly fine right through its butt. And so it just opens it up, pulls in the air. Those leptophragmatic cells take the water out, distribute it, and they're fine.
Okay.
And that's how they get the water, even when they're in dry, arid environments in the middle of the desert. And they're eating, dry grain that has 1% moisture in it.
Dry, dead stuff.
Yeah. So the application really is then...
That was my next question.
We know that they are able to open up their rectums and pull in the air and that this is how they function. Can we do something that targets those cells within our pesticides that would be better at eliminating the beetles from? Because they do billions, hundreds of billions of dollars in damage to crops every year.
Agriculture community.
Mm-hmm. And so are there ways that we can better specifically target the beetles now that we know this with pesticides that may have less impact on human health or plant health?
I feel like another implication of this is now like this will be the next like teenage TikTok trend and like kids will be trying to breathe through their butts.
Yeah. Well, I think that kind of started with the last Frozen movie, right? When they talked about, did you see that when Olaf says something about how turtles can breathe through their butts?
Oh, I've never watched Frozen.
No.
We only watch kids shows that involve cars.
Okay, well, you'll eventually watch it.
Eventually.
There's a scene where he says turtles can breathe through their butts and all the kids cracked up laughing.
And I was like, is that true?
And I looked it up and I guess it is in some extent. I don't know the details.
Okay.
That's not something they teach us in vet school, nor do they teach us about beetles extracting water from the air through their butts. I hope it doesn't turn into a TikTok trend, but who knows?
You never know.
Yeah. Who All knows? Right. If it does, I mean, it's be another reason to not have TikTok.
Well, that is very strange research. I would put that up there with the group that figured out how to like turn a dead spider into like a robotics using like air. That was another.
Yeah, that was quite cool though. Like it was.
There, it's all it was cool. The claw. It's just,
you know,
yeah.
You can grab stuff with it.
Oh, weird. So I'll wrap up our storytelling with a very cute little article. And I'll probably use one of these pictures for our social media because superb fairy wrens are adorable. And this is these tiny birds get by with a little help from their friends. And it was a group that looked at sort of like their social structure. And they found that these particular birds will like come to the aid of like a family member or a close friend if they're in distress, but will completely ignore distress calls from another superb fairy wren that they don't know. And like they can hear the differences in the voices of their fellow birds and like determine like, oh, my friend's in trouble. And they'll go down. Like if the bird is like, you know, trapped by a kookaburra was the fake animal that they mimicked this study with. Like another bird will come down and be like, that's my brother. And they'll like fake an injury or something like off in the distance, like wobble on the ground to like lure the predator away from their friend and put themselves at high risk. Like they'll exhibit high risk. They rated it like high risk, medium risk, and low risk behavior to like get the predator away from their friends. And they did like social constructs. So they like captured the birds, banded them so they could ID them and then observed them with binoculars. And they had like different sounds that they played and they recorded like when they would catch a bird, they would record its distress calls because obviously as gentle as these humans are being, that bird's probably like, whoa, let me yell out to my friends because something's wrong here. So they would record that bird's distress call and now they have a recording. And if they played that recording, they could tell like, oh, you know, that one is related to that one. And that family member came down to try to help when they heard that call. And they have it divided into three groups. They have the core social unit, which is like family, you know, and then community because they start to like get to know other families in these big bird clusters. And then there's just the unfamiliar bird that they don't know. They've never met before. And they never, I can't say never, they rarely ever helped an unfamiliar bird, which is kind of funny. And I like the last paragraph of this because you're kind of like, what is the relevancy here? Because although humans and fairy wrens are extremely distant, evolutionarily speaking, it says the last common ancestor lived at least 200 million years ago. And it's quite interesting that the complex pattern of the cooperative behavior shown by these tiny little birds is so familiar to us. Cause like, obviously you're going to help your friend before you help a stranger. But some people help strangers. Some birds help strange birds. But like, I'm going to go full mama bear if someone's making my kids scream. Whereas if like an adult is screaming, I might be like, ooh, I hope somebody else helps them. Yeah, I'll admit it. I mean, now, kids scream, I'm going to help any kid that's in trouble. But like, you know what I mean? Like you kind of prioritize in your mind, like what risk am I willing to put myself in for what I think is happening over there? Like maybe I'm just going to stand over here and call the police. Instead of put myself in direct.
Jump into action.
But like, you know that if it's your family member, you're going to do what you need to do. Like, you'll just go crazy. Like, that's a given. So it's really interesting that these little birds have this same sort of like reasoning and like get to know their family and friends by their sounds. So it kind of, the fact that, you know, our last traceable relative between us and these birds is 20 million years ago.
What is it?
It's suggesting. Oh, it doesn't say.
Didn't it say 200 dinosaur? Million years ago?
Yes, 200 million years ago is where they, I don't know how, and I don't even know who they are. They have traced it back. But it suggests that like multi-level societies are like an ancient innovation that sort of evolved for survival of species because you have to protect your own, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. That is cool. I will say back to the they comment.
Yeah. Okay, who's they? Are. Google? Yeah.
Brian Regan. Comedian has a joke that talks about science. And in that, he talks about just how they say like the first beetle was 200 million years ago and how scientists can basically just make it up. Like, yeah. Who's really going to go check and verify, and who's going to be able to verify? So back there was 200 million years ago, some dinosaur, they said it. Like, sure. I mean,
yep,
you can't refute it. So
it's written on the internet.
It sounds fine. Yeah. I went and looked these up because when you first were described what you were going to talk about, I had no idea you were going to talk about a bird. You just said superb.
Fairy wren.
I heard superb fairy run. Like it was a run.
Fairy wren. Okay. Yeah. W-R-E-N. My right. bad. Little birds.
So, but the minute I typed in superb in Google, fairy wren came up and I was like, oh, it's a bird. So at first I thought you were going to talk about some sort of like maze that they developed for fairies, but fairies aren't real. So I didn't know where we were going with this story. And so,
I think
but
we
then,
had some pretty good articles today.
When I looked up fairy wren, two things come up, which is cool. The incubation call. That's kind of like furthering what you were talking about. The parents teach their little, hatchlings, their little birds, babies. There's a special like secret password that enables. So those parents always know when those birds make a call, they know that it's their baby
but
making
like,
that call.
How similar is that to like parents with their kids? Like you teach your kid, like, I think it's so cool. Like,
yeah, I just think that incubation's called cool that they each have like all of these little families have their own like little secret password if they're in help that they can yell so they know it's their bird that's their baby that's in distress.
Yeah.
And then the other thing that came up is the male superb fairy wrens, they say, are labeled as the least faithful birds in the world. Just so you know.
What? So they're like protecting their kids.
They're not monogamous. Females can be courted up by up to 13 males in 30 minutes. So, and 76% of the young are from males outside of that social group.
Well, thank you for that fact. It says they travel in massive groups, but they like get to know like their immediate family and then like their little like neighborhood community. I feel like your kids are.
Do you hear that?
I did. I don't know what she said, but.
I'm sure the two-year-old is trying to take one of her toys and she's getting upset. She's yelling at him.
Gotcha.
So I should probably go stop UFC 218.
Good thing we've
out
reached
in the living
the
room.
End. I hope your house is still standing.
Yeah. I hope the dogs aren't tied together and kids are having colored on the walls, but they're usually great. I mean, I have no complaints. They're usually great. They listen well, but I've pushed it to the extreme. It's been 38 minutes.
So
don't call Child Protective Services. They're fine. Especially by the time this gets out there. I mean, I would have been back to them. I'm sure they just want some pancakes or something.
Yeah.
All right. So yeah, thanks for everyone for listening. Hope you enjoyed the articles. We'll be back. Hopefully we'll do this again in April before like the end of the month. Maybe we'll plan to get that done.
Yes.
Middle of the month, actually get it out at a normal time and not in May. And then we also just released that episode with Dr. Jody Selinsky from New Zealand. So if you're listening to this and you haven't checked that out, definitely go check it out. It's interesting to hear about different, regulations and how they do animal research
down
in
under.
New Zealand, down under. Yeah. So anyways, thanks for everyone for listening and go check us out on social media. Follow us, rate us, review us wherever. It does help. And we'll catch you guys next time. Thank you so much. See ya.
Bye.